So if you're going to find a godly man, don't just find a man who goes to church. The devil goes to church, for crying out loud.
That's true.
Yeah. So just because he goes to church and speaks Christianese doesn't make him a Christian.
Yes.
The Bible is very clear that the way to know a Christian is to look at the fruit that such person bear. And the Bible tells us that there are two types of fruit that we produce. We produce fruit of the flesh and fruit of the spirit. So Galatians 5. So when you look at a believer, you look at what type of fruit is this person producing. And that is the person you marry.
Life is God's gift to you. What you do with it is your gift back to God. Well, in a world where challenges are plentiful, it's easy for us to feel discouraged. Yet with enough guidance and support, most people can achieve more in life than they ever dreamed possible. Well, beyond your fears is everything you ever dreamed of. But the Dr. Stem Show will give the voiceless a voice and the hopeless hope. And now, here she is, Dr. Stem.
So as we have a discussion today, I have someone who not only saved his own marriage, but is now, you know, working with couples around the world. So this is not only going to benefit couples that are from Africa, that is going to benefit marriages that are right here in the United States or anywhere in the world where you are at. So we are talking about saving marriages today. I am talking to Brother Femi Awodele. Brother, welcome to the Dr. Stem Show.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be on with you.
I'm not excited for you because you know what? I know there are a lot of people that when you start talking about marriages, especially for Africans and how we can save our marriages, some disagree with you, some agree with you. So I'm excited to hear, you know, what you have to say today.
Yes, amen. I trust God that the Holy Spirit will speak through you and I.
And that was my prayer as well, you know, before I started the show, because what I wanted was more than anything for him to speak through us, his word, so that these marriages can be saved, you know, only his way. So before, before I start, I'm just going to tell the people just a little bit about you, you know, a background which fits the show. Brother Femi Awodele is the Executive Director of Christian Couples Fellowship International Incorporated, which is a marriage ministry based out of Omaha, Nebraska. He's based out of Omaha, Nebraska. What I like about his background is that he says about 16 years ago, his marriage was going to be a statistic. And for God's grace, this moment was the turning point that led him to study the institution of marriage. He had to quit his corporate job at that time and got into ministry full time. At the time that I read this, he had 9 published books, but we'll get to hear from him whether he's published more books since this biography was written on the internet. I know at that time he also had 2 unpublished workbooks, Speaking Opportunities Around the World, which I know he's still doing, and Policy Activism on Marriage, and over 400 plus mostly articles that are mostly on relationships. So he's a blogger for all of you that are the new school. He's a blogger that's on the internet. So I am so excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stem.
So did you write any more books?
Yes, I did. I think the last count, it was 13. 13. Once published specifically in Africa. Mm-hmm. And 2 of them currently out of print. So I have about 10. In circulation all over the U.S.
Wow. So the reason why I searched you on the internet, as you know, and, you know, let me just let the viewers and the listeners know that Brother Femi is from Nigeria. And the reason, yes, the reason why I sought you out and was very interested in talking to you today was because we have a lot of, you know, fellow Africans that are now killing their wives or spouses, and a lot of divorces that are happening around the world. And I thought, you know what, let me have a conversation with someone not only who's in the ministry, but who has experience going through, you know, a near breakup of a, you know, a marriage. So what is marriage, and where are we going wrong today in understanding, you know, marriage?
Well, thank you very much, my sister. This is an area that is I'm very passionate about, yes, probably because of my own personal experience. Yes. I was born and raised in Lagos, Nigeria. I grew up in a very religious home. I believe some people were born again and some were definitely not. So I had a background of church and religion and all of that. And in 1989, after college, in Nigeria, we served the country for a year. We call it Youth Corps. In 1989, I gave my life at that time. And I was on fire for the Lord. My wife now was somebody I met in college back in Nigeria. For Nigerians, it's called University of Ife. And so we got married, and I born again, but I didn't realize how much of my culture was in me when I came here. So I got here 92, and my wife was born here. I grew up some in Nigeria, but most of our life has been in the U.S. And I thought we were going to have a very good marriage, because that's what everybody told us. You're a Christian, you're going to have a good marriage. Well, it turns out that was a lie, that whether you're a Christian or not, you're going to have trouble. And I realized later that Apostle Paul already said that. So we had a lot of trouble, and 97 was a culmination of that, which led me to tell my wife, you know what, I want out of this marriage. And that experience led us to, or led me at that time, to start to seek and say, God, what is there? What is there? And I started to understand that a lot of the things I was thought was marriage was not marriage. I realized that what I had known all my life was an hybrid of biblical principles and culture, and it worked in Nigeria, it worked in African countries, but those type of hybrid principles does not work here in the US, and obviously it's causing a lot of problem. And this was 17 years ago that I decided that I was going to do this full time. 1999, but 2000 was when I decided, you know what, God, I give up. I'm going to do this full time. And we have had an epidemic of Africans killing their spouse. And last year we had one female who killed the husband. And it's unfortunate that I actually happen to know that that couple, because their church they live in Delaware, I believe, but they go to a church in Philadelphia that I frequent. So it's a phenomenon that, you know, I'm willing to look more into to explain in details if we have that time.
We're going to be talking about it, because you know what, this is why, the reason why, and I didn't know about the female that, you know, killed her husband, because there are a lot of couples that it's not reported, but there's a lot of domestic, yes, violence that is, yes, just, you know, I mean, it's the norm for most Africans, because then, you know, once they pay the dowry, they, yeah, pretty much feel like they own the wife. So then they, yeah, come here, and it's unfortunate that they're still trying to control, you know, the woman, and you know, there's a lot of disagreements. So I think where we need to start is, you know, maybe the differences that, you know, these African couples or couples are experiencing. What is the difference between being married at home, you know, and being married in the United States right now, that is so frustrating for these couples that they get to, you know, the point of hurting each other?
Okay, so there are a couple of differences,
yeah,
that is causing problem. The first one is the fact that back home in Africa, marriage is between two families. So marriage is between two families. So when I married my wife, we had what is called engagement, and I found out that this happened all over Africa. The two families are now married. That means nobody else can marry in that family. You are considered marriage. And if anybody else come up and say, I want to marry, it is considered incest in the African context. And there's a lot that goes with that. But in the Western culture, marriage is between two people. Marriage is strictly between two people. It's not uncommon here, actually very common, to have brothers marry their sister-in-law.
Mm.
Yes, very common. I know a few people that has been in that situation. So here, marriage is seen from the concept of one of individual. Back home, it's a concept of family. So family get involved. Family don't let you divorce. Families resolve all the issues. But here, because it's individualized, people get away from marriage very quickly. And they give you the thing of, you know, it's my life, I want to be happy, and things like that. Back home, it's not about your happiness. It's about the good name of your family. Because you don't want your family to have a bad name that, oh, one of you is divorced. Then the other problem that is, you know, but one major one is that back home, the man is told that what makes him a man is the fact that he's able to lead his home financially. So back home, before people like you get your PhD, mm-hmm. people like my wife
yes.
get our MD, women used to sell things. They just, you know, they go to the market and sell things. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem is that they are now dependent on the husband. So when you add the culture of bride price into the mix of a man that is being told the way you maintain your home is money. You know, there's a joke in where I come from, and I tell this joke all over the place when I go, is that in Africa, they tell the man, if your wife asks for $100, don't give her 100, give her 50. But you see, because that's your control mechanism. But the same culture.
Because it's 50-50.
Yeah. No, not because it's 50-50. It's because you don't want to give her everything she's asking you.
Oh.
See, you want to maintain leverage. You want to maintain dominance. So you never give her everything she's asking because she's dependent on you and she has to know who is boss. But the same culture teaches the woman, if you want to ask your husband for, if you need $50, don't never ask your husband for 50. Ask for 200. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a very fascinating thing. So women get away with that. They make a lot of money and they have extra from things like that. And what happened is that our mothers, you know, grandmothers, great-grandmothers, that was how they existed. But because the man was the one that brought home the money, because he was the educated one and he's the one that whose income tops the home. But that system is starting to fall apart when girls starts to go to college, when girls starts to become high income earner.
Mm-hmm.
And in America, we are now seeing a lot of that problem because a lot of the women are now educated. And one of the questions I get asked all the time when I'm speaking is, so what do you do when your wife makes more money? And I say, you don't do anything. I mean, in my house, my wife makes more money. She's a doctor. Mm-hmm. Even when I was... worked in corporate and I make good money, I didn't make the type of money she made, you know? So it is unfortunate that back home, our leadership is tied to finance. And when we come to a Western country, finance, that is taken away from us. And there's so many reasons for that. You know, education is one of it. The society is one of it. You know, back home, we are a patriarchal society. In Western countries are matriarchal society.
So, Brother Femi, do you think that, you know, the effect of, you know, I mean, who's making more money and how it's dealt with in a family, that you know, it's individualistic, where, you know, your wife might not put that, you know, as something that she puts over your head to say, look, I'm the one that's earning more money, so I need the respect, where it's a role reversal per se. Do you think that, you know, I mean, there are some women that actually, you know, will say, well, wait a minute, I'm making the more money, so now I need the respect. Could that be what's going on?
Yes, actually, it is one of the things. It's actually one of the big things that is going on. Let me give you two examples. The last time I got involved with all these killings where African men were killing their wives, at that time, I've forgotten what year, it's about 10 years ago, there were 10 cases. And all those 10 cases, 8 of it were very similar. 8 of it was a man who had lived in America for God knows how many years, has a bachelor's degree, but drives a taxi. You know, drives a taxi or does some whatever job. But he goes back home, he pretends that he's what he's not, marries somebody from home, brings that person here. And that person, you know, women easily adapt than men.
Yeah.
That woman, you know, goes to LPN school, go to RN, go to whatever. And in a very short order, that woman is making more money than the man. And the first couple of years, she's obedient. She's nice because she feels she has to be loyal to this man who brought her from home. But after some time, the man's income is not increasing, her income is increasing, and the man is not running the house the way the woman wants. In fact, she cannot say anything. So very soon, the woman is saying, you know what, I'm not giving you my money anymore. Now I'm going to run my own money. And in 8 out of the last 10 cases, the debt at that time, I think this was 2002 or 2000, I don't know what year, about 10 years ago. 8 out of the 10 cases was that, where the man eventually now turned around and killed the woman because she was ungrateful for him bringing her to America. So yes, a lot of the cases somehow is related to that, where the woman now has dominance financially, and she also doesn't know how to manage her newfound, quote-unquote, dominance in terms of money. So one of the things I teach now is, just because you make more money doesn't make you the head of the family. The head of the family is not a cultural or a anthropological thing. It's purely biblical. If you allow me, I'll give you another example. Many years ago, again, I'm not good with year. I don't remember now.
Okay.
I was in Melbourne, Australia. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Melbourne was receiving a lot of Sudanese couples who had been in refugee camps, just like America did. You know, at that time, I can't remember what year, but it was in the early 2000s. America and Western countries were taking a lot of refugees from Sudanese from refugee camp. And a lot of them went to Melbourne. And in Melbourne, there's a place in Melbourne called Dandenong, which is like the kind of like downtown black neighborhood, so to say, neighborhood. So I arrived in Melbourne, my host, he was hosting a meeting of pastors. And I arrived and he said to me on the way to the airport, I'm taking you to this meeting because I think you're an expert and we don't know what to do. I said, what is happening? He told me, he said, a lot of the Sudanese men were killing their wives. And as of the time that I arrived, they had like 4 in 1 week. So the government reached out to the pastors and said, what do we do? So I got to that meeting and they said, oh, okay. What happened is when we got to Melbourne, the government was giving the women money. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you understand. So
yes, the
government of Australia wanted to give this family compensation. And unfortunately, because Western countries are matriarchal, they gave the money to the woman instead of the man. And the woman finally said, this is my money. This is not our money. So it creates a lot of problems.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Download our new apps and be part of the most informed audience in broadcast. Like a lot of people I know, I was struggling with that work-life balance. You know, working really long hours, trouble sleeping at night, even my energy was low. Well, I knew something had to change when I found myself in the hospital. Well, then someone sent me a product called Healthy Cell Pro and told me to take it for 30 days. I figured, what do I got to lose? 3 weeks into a one-month supply and, well, the results told me everything. More restful sleep, a sharper focus. I even had more energy, even from Malcolm Out Loud, that is. Nobel Prize nominee inventor, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. He explains it this way. It works by infusing your cells with over 60 plant-derived phytonutrients that target the building block of your body, which is the cell. Well, I liked it so much, I asked the company for a special deal for you. Instead of $110 plus shipping, you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan plus free shipping. Just go to healthycell.com, use the limited time offer code OUTLOUD.
I think one of the things that we discuss a lot is this, my and we. That yes. Most couples, you know, don't get to that place where they change from this is my house, my money, this is my stuff, and, you know, this is ours. We have this together, so that it's a we. Do you find that that's something that couples are actually probably negating to do, to come together as one?
It is. The concept of becoming one is actually very difficult for any culture. Mm. Whether Western or Asian or Latina, it is particularly very difficult for those of us that come from Africa. Particularly difficult. Because, again, I'm speaking from somebody who has visited, I think, between 10 and 15 African countries, I think. Okay. I'm not sure, but all over the place, west, east, south. And one of the things, and I'm saying this as something I've seen, one of the things that is very common to us is that we see our wives as property because of the bride price payment. We see them as property. And many cultures, particularly the West African cultures, you know, the Yorubas, the Igbos, probably even some, you know, we just don't take these women. We are actually told not to consult with our wives. Okay, so let me tell you something about the Yorubas. I'm Yoruba.
Okay.
And Yorubas have a proverb. I don't know if it's a proverb. It's just a saying. It's a saying that God did not give women goiter. You know, goiter that men has?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we have this saying that God did not give women goiter because they cannot keep secrets. Yes. So men are taught not to do a comparative analysis of issues with their wives. Because she, number one, don't talk to her because she cannot keep secrets. Number two, don't talk to her because she's not smart. Just because her brain works differently than yours, we translate that to mean she's not smart. So yes, the issue of becoming one is a big problem from a cultural standpoint. And until we can overcome, when you are doing your therapy sessions,
yes,
until they get over that cultural concept. And what I try to say to them when I meet them from a pastoral standpoint is, you know, culture evolves, culture change over time, but the word of God never changes. So, and I tell them, the Bible never ever said your wife is inferior to you. The Bible never ever said, in fact, if anything, the Bible says two shall become one. So I come from from the angle of, if you say you are a Christian, then this is what the Bible says. Then you cannot go back to the culture that says, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. But I can say that in 17 years or so of full-time ministry, I can see that it has changed a little bit. It has moved a little bit.
You know, I was reading one of your blogs, and I mean, my mouth dropped, because then, you know, sometimes I think from a cultural perspective, you forget how the culture is. But you mentioned that, you know, you were talking about physical abuse.
Yes.
And you were talking about that, you know, I mean, some men even have a special belt to discipline, yes, their wives and children.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, now I'm going, you know, I've been here for 32 years. I'm going, huh? A belt to discipline the wife?
Mm-hmm. But, oh, yeah.
But that is cultural, you're saying.
Yes, it is. It is, I mean, it is so cultural that when you go home after your wife or husband beats you, the first thing your family is going to ask you is, what did you do?
That's true.
What they will ask you, what did you do that he beat you this much? I mean, when you, I have counseled cases where the man abused the woman, and the mother of the woman asked her, what did you do that he beat you this much? In fact, another wife said, another mother said to the child, to the daughter, wow, there's nothing your husband does that other men have not done. So you just learn to, you know, you learn to live with it as long as he's still taking care of you.
That one I've heard, and
yeah.
So you see, here's the thing that I'm thinking. I'm thinking that I think we have done a disservice, especially to the men, because then I don't remember us having, you know, opportunities where we can sit down with the men and explain to them, you know, the differences now here of, you know, I mean, to try and hopefully educate them per se, which I know will be difficult, because then, you know, to talk to the men and try to tell them what to do and what not to do as far as, you know, beating your wife and controlling your wife in this culture probably won't be received well. But I think with that, you know, kind of forum where we can talk to the men, or, you know, I mean, you as pastors can talk to the men about the differences and what's right and what's wrong, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable, probably might change. Because then the women, we have a lot of forums where we are talking to the women. We have a lot of empowerment where we were empowering the women to come out of that submissive position and be able to get educated and be able to get work and be more assertive, you know, as individuals. And unfortunately, the assertiveness is going into the marriage, and the men are not ready. They're not ready for these wives that are coming in and saying, well, you know what, I've got this education and I know better, and you can't beat me. You cannot have this belt to discipline me, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, you see, there is a fundamental problem that we're facing.
Yes.
And that fundamental problem cannot be solved on the surface. There's so much beneath the iceberg that what we're trying to solve is just the tip of the iceberg. Mm. What we need to solve, you see, marriage, to me at least, is universal, whether you are in Asia, whether you are in Brazil, whether you are in Nigeria, or you are in America. Now, each one of these places that I mentioned have their own culture. They have their own religion that relates to marriage. And what we need to do is bring the principles of scripture to bear in each one of those cultures. And each person can now decide which what they like and what they don't like. Mm. So in the African context, for instance, as bad as our concept of patriarchal society is, there are things we do well. And in America, there are things that they do bad. You know, for instance, I remember very well my first son, who is now going to be 22, when he was born in the hospital, I remember the nurse asking my wife if my name should be on the birth certificate. And I almost lost it. I'm like, are you kidding me? Mm. I'm a husband. You're asking my wife permission to put my name? I mean, where I come from, they will ask me if her name should be on the list, you know. So there is, each society has their own good and bad and whatever.
Yeah.
And what we need to do is to teach. Now, I can tell you that after 17 years of doing this,
yes,
by God's grace, a lot of the churches are now very much aware. When I started doing this in 2000, there were very few people doing this. Very, very few people. In fact, my book, I wrote a book on this called African Marriages in Western Culture. When I wrote it, TBN invited me to come and speak on it. I got a lot of publicity on that book because I did not realize it was the first of its type in terms of the first person. And it was not an academic book. It was just something I noticed and I wrote.
Yes.
So it got a lot of notoriety because it was the first time somebody was even addressing that issue. So we are talking to men. I speak to a lot of men. But one of the things I have found is that many of them are very resistant.
Yes.
They are resistant because many of them say, you are teaching me to adopt American culture and leave African culture. But I said to them, no. I'm not asking you to take anybody's culture. If you say you are a Christian, I am asking you to adopt biblical principles. Okay, that's all I'm asking. I'm not asking you to take American culture. I'm not asking you to take Nigerian culture. I'm asking you to say, if I can show you in the Bible that this is what God says, will you do it?
Yes.
And that is, I have found to be success. I have found that in the beginning, 17 years ago, I mean, I'm talking, even pastors were beating their wives. Many of them. I mean, I will go to speak, the wives will call me on the side and tell me what's going on. So this was very rampant. But now, I can honestly say it has changed. Now, unfortunately, many years ago, I was working with some African leaders so that we can have like a national database, so to say, so that we Africans can have like a united front on many levels, both politically, for our marriages, resources, and things like that. Unfortunately, that didn't work out. Maybe the timing was not right. But there's so much effort going on in different angles. But we still have a long way to go. One of the things I will have to say to you, though, is that I have found that that there's a big difference, and some people will disagree with me on this, that when the time that you came to America, your generation came here for academic, came here to get a degree, came here for school, is different from the new generation of Africans coming here or those who came here with visa lottery. I don't know. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, but I didn't know that they would have different, goals.
Oh, they are very different.
That they would still come to get an education, but I guess not.
No. They say fundamental difference, mm-hmm. and somebody needs to do this from a sociological study standpoint. Mm. There's a difference in the Africans who came here by winning visa lottery. They usually are more, they are more, what is the word that I'm looking for? They abuse, they do abuse more than those who came, those who were the top of their class, who came to America just for education.
Okay.
At least for me, that's an unscientific observation.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, you mentioned a little bit about pastors, and I remember reading one of your articles that actually had statistics on alarming statistics, I must add, on pastors. Well, here's the thing. Back home, most of the, people, when you have problems in your marriages, you either have an aunt, a grandmother that you go to, but most people went to pastors,
yes.
for them to get the counseling. So when I read this statistic, I'm going, now who are they going to go to? Let me just read a little bit about the statistics that you had at
yes.
that time, and I hope and pray to God that they are lower numbers than this.
Yes.
At that time, 1,500 pastors leave ministry monthly because of moral failure, spiritual burnout, etc. 50% of the pastor's marriages end in divorce. 80% of pastor's spouse feel their spouse is overworked and they feel left out and unappreciated. 80%, wow, of pastor's spouse feel they are pressured to do what they don't really want to do.
Yeah.
70% pastors are diagnosed with depression.
Yep.
70% of those pastors don't have a close friend, confidant, or mentor.
Yes.
95% of the pastors don't pray daily with their spouse.
Yep.
Now you see where the problem is, and you said 75% of pastors only study the Bible for sermon, but not personal study.
Absolutely. That statistics is from Focus on the Family.
Yes.
It was a statistics that Focus on the Family has one of their branches is they take care of pastors. And it used to be headed by Dr. Dobson's cousin. And they did a lot of study. I'm not sure if they still have that department. But that statistics, if anything, actually, to be honest with you, is probably not any better.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it's not any better. And the reason is actually very easy. Today, a lot of people go into ministry, not so much from a calling standpoint, but from a vocation standpoint.
Mm.
It's not so much, you know, God has called me, I'm going to stick it through. It is now a vocation. It is now, I have many, 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 many who I can tell you are struggling. I know for a fact that they are struggling.
Mm.
And again, because of what I do, I get to hear.
Yes.
I get to hear. I don't want to give too much out on the radio because many people might be listening.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, for the most part, I am that person that I'm the outlet for a lot.
Yes.
Who get called and, you know, I can't say much. I just have to, you know, use wisdom and use whatever it is to, you know, to help the situation. But a lot of people are suffering. A lot of pastors are depressed because, you know, this is my second son wants to go into ministry. He's heading to Liberty University this year.
Yes.
And when he told me, although I know he has a call of God on his life, I almost went into depression because he was, because I know what pastors go through. But I know also that there are pastors, if they do it right.
Yes.
They will do well. So a lot of the pastors, I mentor many of them, and I tell them, your first ministry is your family.
Exactly.
The church is God's church, not your church. You have to think that way. Your first ministry is your wife, your children. Let the church know from day one that this is your priority. Now, everybody understands that in the beginning, when you're building a church, it's going to require time. But at the same time, give some time to your spouse. Let your spouse know that when I am with you, you have me for that 1 hour. What is the word that I'm looking for? All full attention. Turn off the cell phone. Turn off everything. Let that person know that they are with you.
So then, you know, I mean, hearing all this and what's happening today in today's marriage, I don't want to lie to you. Single people like myself, we're scared to death to even, you know, I mean, begin to pray for, you know, for a husband, because then, you know, it's getting scary, because then the more educated that you are, you're being told, well, you know what, you're more of a threat to a husband. And the more independent that you are, now you're a threat to a husband. What would you tell, you know, those professional women, which there are many of us, you know, today out there that are still single and awaiting, you know, that godly marriage that we've always, you know, known that we wanted?
You know, last year I was very privileged to speak at a conference. Actually, I was the anchor of that conference, where everybody in that conference, they were in their 40s, most of them were in late 30s, 40s, single professional women, all financially, everything. I mean, they were everything. They were done. They were done with school. They made a ton of money. Mm. And so we came together, about 30 or 40 of them, maybe 50, I'm not sure. We came together and we just had fun for like 5 days in Atlanta.
Wow.
And one of the things I told them, and they want to do it again. I don't know. It took a lot to plan, but we'll see. Yeah. But one of the things that we talked about is this. You see, Paul the apostle wrote to the Corinthian church in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 28. He said, "I wish that you will be single like me. But if you cannot hold yourself, then get married. But let me spare you, those who marry will have problems." Now, having said that, for people who marry, when they marry and they run their marriage the way God wants it to run, because there is a perfect will of God for marriage, and that perfect will of God for marriage can be attained. That is what people like me do for a living. I teach in conferences, in classes, whatever. Here are God's principles for marriage. Now, if we can adhere to the principle, now, when I say principles, I mean starting from before marriage. Mm. So if you're going to find a godly man, don't just find a man who goes to church. The devil goes to church, for crying out loud.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So just because he goes to church and speaks Christianese doesn't make him a Christian.
Yes.
The Bible is very clear that the way to know a Christian is to look at the fruit that such person bear. And the Bible tells us that there are two types of fruit that we produce. We produce fruit of the flesh and fruit of the spirit. So Galatians 5. So when you look at a believer, you look at what type of fruit is this person producing. And that is the person you marry. So if you marry somebody, if you can find somebody, if God places, if you are careful and whatever enough to get that godly man, they are still there. They're out there, actually, to be honest with you. Then the foundation is right. Then both of you can start applying biblical principle. I can tell you also statistically that people who are married, they make more money. Very easy, because now you maintain one household with two income. And when you are happy in marriage, you live longer. So there are a lot of benefits to marriage. If it is done right, if you both die to yourself and all of that. But the problem comes when you want a godly marriage, but you don't want to apply biblical godly principles. That's where the problem comes.
You are tuned in to the Dr. Stem Show. To reach Dr. Stem or her guest, please email us at drstem@americaoutloud.com. Now, back to Dr. Stem for more support, confidence, and hope.
You can't have a mistress. It's just either me, myself, and I as your wife, and nobody else. And there's still men that says, well, I can still have, you know, as many wives as I want, as well as mistresses.
Well, let me answer that by telling a very, very funny story.
Okay.
It was told to me by somebody who was involved in it. This person told me that her husband was committing adultery. And he was staying late. They are both professionals. Both of them were professionals. And she went and told the husband's father that your son is committing adultery and your son is not coming home till 1 a.m., 2 a.m., you know, coming home late. And the father was mad and told the wife, tell your husband to come see me tomorrow. So she was so happy that... oh, my daddy is going to set my husband straight. So they got to daddy the next day. And daddy said to the husband, what do you want to do that you cannot do during the daytime? Eh? Don't let armed robber kill you. You know? And that is a true story.
Wow.
So what happened is back home, obviously, culturally, polygamy is accepted, even in churches.
Yes.
There are some churches that allow that. But obviously, when you look at Bible, the Bible allows only one. The
yes.
perfect will of God is one. Anybody beyond one is operating in a permissive will. Now, when you come to Western country, when you come to America, or I can say of America because I know American law.
Yes.
America only allows one wife legally.
Yes.
You cannot marry two women legally in America. But some states like New York, like Utah, like some of these Mormon states, they marry one woman legally, but then they do common law with the other wives. So what happened is the state just look on the other side. So the state has the power to prosecute them, but the state has decided this is not what our persecuting. Because how many people are you going to persecute? Yeah. So that is why when you go to New York, you see a lot of these Muslim people from Africa
mm-hmm.
have many women in their house. So in America, only one is recognized.
Interesting.
Yes. Only one is recognized by law. Only one. But people don't care. They put the other one in the house, and the state can persecute, but many states just choose not to. That's not where they want to spend their resources. So, but from a Bible standpoint, Genesis chapter 2, Ephesians chapter, Matthew 19, and Ephesians 5 is very clear. For this reason, a man shall marry a woman and two shall become one. Yes.
Yeah, so I think the challenge for men now, because the reason why they were able to have, you know, many wives, as you mentioned in one of your blogs, I think I remember you saying your grandpa had 10 wives, but he was able to take care of them, and that was the key, to take care of them. So now that women are taking care of themselves, I think, you know, that becomes a problem for them to accept, you know, being the second, third woman, or to have another woman coming in, because they're able to take care of themselves. So could that be one of the reasons why we also have a high rate of divorces?
Well, there is a perspective angle to the word taking care of.
Yeah.
You know, my grandpa will probably tell people he can take care of his wife, but taking care of his wife is very, very, very relative. So what my grandmother went through is definitely not what my mother went through in terms of standard of living. And it's obviously not what my wife is going through.
Yeah.
So taking care of is very, very relative. So culturally, I don't think people who get themselves involved in polygamy, I don't think polygamy is the reason they divorce. I really honestly don't think so. I think the reason they divorce is way other than polygamy. Now, there's a difference between polygamy, which is marrying more than one wife, or committing or having a mistress. So a lot of people do, and this is the one that causes divorce, is you say you are married to me, I'm the only wife that you say to people that you have, but then you have mistresses every city you go. See, one of the problems that I am starting to see, and it's now very common among diaspora Africans, very, very common, is, and right now this one is not even on the surface yet, it's still percolating below the surface because of shame. Nobody wants to talk about it,
yes.
But I'm starting to see it a lot, is that because of economy, because of whatever, families have been separated. So many men are now bringing their wives and their children to America to settle while they go back home to work. Because somehow they make money, you know, many people, their wife and children are going to school here and they go back to Kenya, or they go back to Lagos, or they go back to
Zimbabwe,
you know, they go back to, I'm sure you know a few who do that, you know, government. And what I'm finding out, and I'm telling these women, that this is dangerous. See, these men, it's not like they love God to the point that they have the fear of God. They are just religious. And when you let him be, you let him have house girl, you let him have driver and all these things, he will have sex with other women.
Yeah.
And before you know it, a child is going to be part of that equation.
Mm-hmm.
So that is happening a lot now. And some of the men, some of the women, when they discover that, they just kick the man out.
Well, here's the thing too, brother. There are women too who are left here that are also having affairs. And
exactly.
Now these men find out and they cannot deal with it.
Exactly.
And my thing when I'm speaking to women, because I'm also, you know, a speaker just like you do, is you cannot play that game that, you know, because you do it, then I will do it. Because men cannot and will not tolerate a wife that will go out and be with another man.
Exactly. And now you're seeing exactly what I'm seeing, where the women, they are here with the children.
Mm-hmm.
They are not log of woods.
Yeah.
And, you know, they find a man who is available to them, maybe give them money. I don't know. And, you know, they decide nobody will know.
It's that affection as well, you know. So besides even the money, it's that affection that, you know, a lot of men forget to understand that, you know, women need that affection as well. So if they find that, you know, somebody that will talk to them and give them that affection, they're going to be drawn to that person when you are away. And then most men, when by the time they come back and you're still being treated like you're a piece of property and there's no affection there, they're still going to be attracted to somebody else. And a lot of these men are not understanding that, you know, that that's something that needs hopefully to be changed.
Yes. I'm personally not a fan of husband and wife separating. I am absolutely not a fan.
Yes.
I always, if they ask for my opinion, I tell them, if you want to do it for a very, very short time, but don't make it your lifestyle.
I'll read to you some of the boundaries for a healthy marriage that Brother Femi wrote on one of his blogs. And I know eyebrows will be raised, and I know there'll be other people that will be saying, what, did he say that? Well, listen to this. He said, you must have each other's passwords for all social media outlets and leave it to the other person to look or check if they saw desire. Except, of course, if it's work-related. I know they really want to get you with this one, brother, because nobody wants to give each other's passwords.
Yes. I can say to your listeners that my wife has every password I have. Actually, more than likely, she set everything I have up. So I don't even know those passwords. She does.
I think it's the ultimate, you know, way to be able to trust each other, because, you know, I don't have anything to hide. And I think neither, you know, should be my partner to have anything, you know, that they need to hide. Because if so, then that's when the problems, you know, suspicion comes in and, you know, disagreements, arguments. But the other one that you say is encourage each other in your daily spiritual growth and in intimacy with God. Because you say the surest boundary is a strong vertical relationship, the fear of God.
Yes. Yeah, and that is one very important aspect. And I've shared this many times in conferences. I'm not even asking you to pray together every day, even though if you can, you should.
That's right, yeah.
But encourage each other in your spiritual walk. So my wife uses a different devotion book than me. I'm more a loyal guy. I use the same devotion for the last 5 years.
Oh, wow.
You know, yes, I've used Oswald Chambers. I've used God Guy for 2 years now. I use about 5 different devotion books.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you almost all of them my wife recommended. And if I like it, I always repeat all of them. I always repeat them. And she picks up new ones every year. So I encourage her. We sometimes in the morning we do it together, but she's doing her own, I'm doing my own.
Okay.
And she's sharing with me. Oh, yeah. So like this morning, we woke up very early and she was sharing with me. So yes, spiritually pray together, but encourage each other in your walk.
Yes. Yes. I like this one where you said avoid talking to an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend or someone that you have feelings for without the knowledge of your spouse. Never keep such conversations a secret. It will come back and bite your kahunas.
Yes, it will. And I that sounds like me. It will. And I have, again, that came out of personal, not personal as it to me, but counseling with people where an old flame that you think is dead just all of a sudden came back to life.
Yeah.
With Facebook, Facebook actually did a lot of that.
Yes.
In the beginning, I had so much counseling in the beginning of Facebook where many people, their old girlfriend, their whatever girlfriend or boyfriend, just, you know, they just saw this person on Facebook and they think life is green on the other side. And I mean, I know three or four cases where a marriage broke up to go to the ex-flame because of Facebook, and they eventually, you know, it didn't work out.
There's quite a lot, actually. There's quite a lot of people that have done that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like I said, I personally dealt with four.
Wow.
Right about in the beginning of Facebook coming around. So mm-hmm. It helped me myself set up boundaries for Facebook.
Yes.
It helped me set up. So I don't, apart from the fact that my wife has my password, there are certain things I don't allow. I just don't. If you are a woman and you cross certain boundaries, I immediately cut you off.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah. So I, you know, there are certain boundaries you don't want to allow. And in the case of X is more, is even more dangerous.
You're right. You're right. I always tell people that, you know, there's a certain language that women, you know, speak with just our eyes, where if I'm an ex and I'm seeing my ex with his wife, you know, and I talk to him a certain way, I'm trying to establish to say, well, listen, I know him before you did, and I have this connection. And I always tell people, you know, you don't want that to happen. But if the wife says, I feel uncomfortable with this person, either you have something to hide or she has seen something in that other woman's eyes that is making her uncomfortable. So to pay, you know, attention to that if you're in a relationship or in a marriage especially.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, it's very important that we close, especially the relationship that was not closed properly.
Yes.
Very important that we close it out.
I can't believe this time. Can you believe it? Just been talking for over an hour now.
Oh my God. I could do this all day.
Sir, it was such a pleasure to talk to you. So what I would like to do is, you know, to invite you over again, because there's so much that we can talk about, and probably you could be my regular, you know, couples counselor, you know, guest that can come in and we can talk more about saving our marriages, especially here in the diaspora.
Anytime, Dr. Stem, anytime.
Thank you so much. And I just
thank you very much.
Yeah, I just want to remind the people that, you know, one of the things that I heard you saying is, you know, marriage is a union of two human beings, you know, that is the male and female. But the structure of marriage was ordained by God, not by any human civilization or culture. And I think that was the premise of, you know, what you were talking about. And you also said no marriage can or will survive in true happiness with both parties making up rules as they go along, following laid out rules and principles, especially the boundaries that we just finished talking about.
Amen. Amen.
So with that, people, I will have a lot of information that Brother Femi wrote about. I will just summarize for you some of the boundaries and some of his thoughts about saving your marriage on my website, which is on America Out Loud under the Dr. Stem Show. Again, thank you so much and God bless.